January 2020 should have been a warning. As the coronavirus threat emerged from China, Trump's attention was elsewhere. During a call with Health Secretary Alex Azar about the virus, Trump interrupted to ask, "What's a coronavirus?" before quickly changing the subject to vaping regulations. "I never should have done this vaping thing," he complained. "Everywhere I go, they're holding signs, 'I vape, I vote.'" This brief exchange perfectly captured what would become a catastrophic pattern, prioritizing political popularity over emerging threats. Behind the scenes, experts tried raising alarms. When Deputy National Security Advisor Matthew Pottinger shared information from a doctor in China comparing the outbreak to the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney confronted him. "That was totally inappropriate. You won't come to another one of these." The pattern was set early. Those delivering unwelcome news would be sidelined. Even as CDC Director Robert Redfield saw enough evidence to support travel restrictions from China, Trump's focus remained elsewhere. When advisors called to discuss evacuating Americans from China, the president initially refused. "We're not letting them come back. You risk increasing my numbers." Only after they appealed to his America First brand did Trump reluctantly agree. What might have been a moment for decisive leadership instead revealed a president more concerned with optics than public health. As COVID-19 spread, Trump's public response relied on wishful thinking rather than science. While privately telling Bob Woodward the virus was deadly stuff, he publicly claimed it would disappear like a miracle. This disconnect between private knowledge and public messaging proved lethal. Trump's magical thinking manifested in his fixation on hydroxychloroquine after seeing it praised on Fox News, despite limited evidence. When experts questioned this, they faced attacks. White House advisor Peter Navarro even accused Dr. Fauci of having blood on your hands for not endorsing it. The situation reached an alarming peak when, following a DHS presentation about sunlight's effect on the virus, Trump speculated on live television about injecting disinfectants. Dr. Birx watched silently as these dangerous suggestions spread globally. Even mask wearing became politically charged. Despite Jared Kushner noting that 70% of battleground voters supported mandates, Mark Meadows warned it would alienate Trump's base. Trump rejected masks, claiming they made him look weak and unpresidential, prioritizing image over public health. By June 2020, Trump demanded to restart campaign rallies after seeing Black Lives Matter protests. When campaign manager Brad Parscale suggested safer outdoor venues with distancing, Trump refused. "They'll show up for me. They're not going to believe this virus stuff. My people are different." The June 20 Tulsa rally exemplified Trump's pandemic approach. Staff removed social distancing stickers and halted COVID testing to avoid negative publicity. The campaign claimed they distributed 1 million tickets. Trump's arrival revealed just 6,200 attendees in the 19,000-seat arena, a devastating visual failure. The health impact was equally dire, with Tulsa County seeing a COVID spike days later. Herman Cain, photographed maskless at the rally, died weeks after. The embarrassment deepened when it emerged that TikTok users and K-pop fans had sabotaged attendance by reserving tickets they never intended to use. "You fucked it up," Trump raged at Parscale, who was demoted shortly after. On October 1, Hope Hicks tested positive for COVID-19 after traveling with Trump. Despite this and his own symptoms, Trump attended a Bedminster fundraiser, violating CDC protocols and potentially exposing donors. That evening, Trump declared, "The end of the pandemic is in sight," while the White House secretly sought FDA approval for compassionate use of monoclonal antibodies. His condition deteriorated overnight. With blood oxygen below 94%, Dr. Sean Conley administered supplemental oxygen despite Trump's resistance. At Walter Reed, he received Regeneron's experimental antibodies, remdesivir, and dexamethasone. Trump took an unauthorized drive past supporters with Secret Service agents, a move condemned as dangerous political theater. Upon returning to the White House, he removed his mask for a campaign video and tweeted that Americans shouldn't fear COVID or let it dominate their lives. Instead of using his experience to empathize with suffering Americans, Trump focused solely on projecting strength. As Election Day approached, Trump preemptively attacked mail-in voting as fraudulent despite evidence to the contrary. On election night, with several states still uncalled, Trump declared victory in a 2 a.m. East Room speech, calling it a fraud on the American public. The next day, Trump privately showed doubt, asking, "How did we lose to Joe Biden?" Yet his campaign quickly shifted to defiance, with Trump tweeting, "Stop the count," and alleging widespread fraud. Under Rudy Giuliani's growing influence, the legal strategy devolved into conspiracy theories. At a pivotal November 19 news conference, Giuliani and Sidney Powell claimed, without evidence, that Venezuelan conspirators had rigged Dominion voting machines to flip votes. As hair dye streaked down Giuliani's face, White House staffers watched in embarrassment, one calling it just like a freak show. After over 50 failed lawsuits and the Supreme Court's swift dismissal of his challenges, Trump's rhetoric turned increasingly dangerous. His tweets promoting January 6th alarmed military leaders, with Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley comparing the president's language to Orwell's 1984. At his Stop the Steal rally, Trump urged supporters to march to the Capitol and fight like hell, leading to the worst attack on American democracy since 1812. From the White House dining room, Trump watched approvingly as events unfolded on television. Despite urgent pleas from advisors, Republican lawmakers, and his daughter Ivanka, he took no action for over 3 hours. The assault left 5 dead and 140 officers injured. Rioters nearly encountered Vice President Pence, who had barely escaped the Senate chamber. Congressional staff barricaded themselves while lawmakers put on gas masks, some making what they feared would be final calls to family. Trump's delayed video response at 4:17 p.m. repeated election fraud claims before telling rioters, "We love you," and asking them to leave, prompting immediate resignations, including Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. In response, 3 senior officials, Milley, Meadows, and Pompeo, established daily calls to ensure peaceful transition. Pentagon officials also quietly reviewed nuclear command protocols, though Trump retained legal launch authority. Trump's final days in office brought America to the brink of constitutional collapse, with the administration rejecting intelligence that contradicted its preferred narratives. What preserved democracy wasn't constitutional design, but individual courage. Officials who refused to manipulate votes, judges who upheld the law regardless of appointment, and military leaders who maintained democratic norms. The events of 2020-2021 revealed enduring vulnerabilities in America's democratic safeguards. They showed that democracy's survival depends not just on institutions, but on the people within them. Their dedication to truth, commitment to country over party, and willingness to defend democratic principles at personal cost.